Welcome to Wherever You Are. I'm Ryan McNeil in Toronto, Canada, and you are listening to the 58th episode of the Matinee Cast. It's the official podcast of thematinee.ca, your home for cinematic passion and perspective. We have put away all the documentaries and moving back into the world of fiction. I did have a great time at Hot Docs, and I do thank everybody who listened and everybody who dropped by the show, but it's time to get back to a little bit more lighthearted fare, and Lord, have we ever got some lighthearted stuff today. But for my guest, there is a cluster of young film bloggers that I like to keep an eye on. And that's because they're all brimming with energy, they have very passionate, and they're all wickedly smart. I haven't had very many of them on the podcast yet, but I'm hoping to change that in the coming weeks and months. And indeed, it begins today. My guest on episode 58 runs the Film Emporium, a wonderful place where only the best films are discussed and discussed at breakneck speed, since the Emporium is one of the most prolific solo effort blogs out there. We're across a very long wire tonight back to Sydney, Australia, where we welcome the proprietor of the Film Emporium, Mr. Andy Buckle, to the Matinee Cast. How are you, sir?
I'm fantastic, Ryan. Thank you. Thanks for having me aboard as well.
My pleasure. I didn't realize until we were talking just before the show that this is actually your podcast debut.
It is, yes. I haven't been on any podcast before, and I'm excited, but yeah, as I said, a little bit nervous, but I'll do my best.
I'm sure you'll do just great. That's a shame that you haven't been on one yet, and I do feel lucky to break you into the wonderful world of podcasting. Well, as you know by now, if you've listened to the show, if you're on Twitter, remember that you can get details and information about Andy and this episode by way of my Mike and the Mechanics tweet series. You can find them for this episode by searching out #MATM. 58. Episode 58, we'll be discussing The Avengers. We'll be fielding some listener feedback about smaller summer movies and talking about our top five Avenger films. But first, let's learn more about my guest. This is Know Your Enemy. All right, Andy, you've heard this before. You know how it works. Make me feel really old and tell me, what was the first film you can remember seeing in a theater?
My mother has always been adamant that the first film she took me to was Snow White and Seven Dwarfs, which was actually re-released in 1993. That's not the original 1937 version. But I don't actually remember that experience very well.
Okay.
The one that I do remember is actually seeing Free Willy, which I believe came out at the end of 93. And I won a colouring competition so I won tickets to the film. I went with my family. So that was one of the first experiences I remember at the cinema.
You're winning a colouring competition and winning tickets to Free Willy might be the greatest thing I've ever heard in my life. So thank you for that.
I used to go to supermarkets. On your way out, they'd be pick up a colouring competition to win tickets to this film. And my mum used to pick them up all the time. And I think I won tickets to The Lion King and Free Willy 2, actually, as well. I saw it in the cinema. And I have a feeling I won that competition for that as well. That's how I saw a lot of my early films when I was young.
I would pay handsome money if any of these coloring images are still around your house.
I don't know. It's possible my mom kept them, but I would really love it.
If you still have them and you could find it this weekend, let me know, because I would love to drop one of these things into the show notes for this show.
Okay, I'll ask my mom if I can find them.
Let's move to more modern times. What was the last film you watched, sir?
It was the other night. It was at the Korean Cultural Office, where they do a program called Cinema in the Park once a week. And I saw Joint Security Area by Park Chan-wook, the director of Old Boy.
Yes.
Yeah, I'd never seen it before. And it's part of the Birth of the Blockbuster month that they're doing there. They do a different theme every month. So last week was dramatic relationships. The month before was Extreme Korea. And this is Birth of the Blockbuster. So in 2 weeks' time, the host is on. Is playing, and yeah, I saw Joint Security Area, which I really liked.
That sounds really cool. Now, and what did you think of Joint Security Area?
I really liked it. I guess I wasn't really sure what to expect going in, but I kind of felt like it was two very different films. It starts out as being, I guess it's set on a border, secured border between North and South Korea, and both sides are patrolled by some soldiers and guards. There's an incident there where two North Korean soldiers are killed and one South Korean is injured, and there's a lot of gunfire, and there's an investigation into it, and no one's story really checks out. So it's sort of this central mystery as to what actually happened. And then it takes a different, adopts a different tone in the middle of the film, we start learning about these people that were involved, and it takes you back to well before the incident. And no one's story really is reliable. It's quite compelling, actually, and it's got the style of that Park Chan-wook is notable for in Old Boy and some of his other films.
And that was actually going to be my next question. Just like you've seen some of his other stuff, like Old Boy and Sympathy for Mr. Vengeance and that kind of thing?
I haven't seen Sympathy for Mr. Vengeance, but I have seen Old Boy.
Okay.
And, recently I watched I Saw the Devil ELC, which were both quite good as well. And even though they're not directed by him, it's sort of that extreme career blockbuster type genre. They're sort of, few down the track now.
It's really cool to know that that this kind of thing is happening. I go on all the time about how lucky I am to have these kinds of things available, because a lot of people who are really passionate about films, and certainly people who listen to this show, they're kind of off in I don't want to say the middle of nowhere, but they're off in towns that don't do that kind of thing. So knowing that there's a place that like a cultural center for South Korean culture that shows this kind of thing is fantastic.
Definitely, yeah. There's all sorts of things going on. There was a series of Japanese films as well that played for about a week. There was two sessions a day, and I managed to see Miyazaki's Porco Rosso there.
Oh, jeez.
And it was just one. And we've got the Sydney Film Festival coming up, so it's always something happening in the city, which is excellent.
What is one of the worst films you've ever seen, sir?
I actually made this as a feature last year. A friend of mine and I were watching, we had a bad movie night, and I selected out Batman and Robin and The Expendables, which I hadn't seen. I just heard it was bad. But yeah, Batman and Robin is probably the worst film I've ever seen. It's just terrible.
I actually paid to see that in a theater, if you can believe it or not.
I guess if you followed all the Batman films, like, I love Burton's Batman and Batman Returns.
Yeah, but I probably should have known better. Like, it didn't really look like it was going to be that good. I can't remember why in the world I would have actually thought to myself, hey, this is going to be a fun time, because there was nothing really going on. It had boring villains. They were on their third Batman by the time. I did like Alicia Silverstone back then, so maybe that was it. Maybe I wasn't exactly leading with my brain.
It's possible. Yeah, there's just way too much going on, and everything about the performances. Arnold Schwarzenegger's, consistent freeze jokes. They're surfing from space at one point or something. Like,
yep.
It's rubbish.
Yeah, I do seem to recall that it's one of the worst written films I've ever seen. Like, it's got some of the most corny, like, not even just Schwarzenegger's stuff, because his stuff is bad enough, but I just remember them just being having, like, such corny jokes.
And I think the friendship between Batman and Robin is ridiculous in itself. Chris O'Donnell is awful, and there's, like, shots of, spandex, every left, right, and center. It's just... Yeah, it's a disaster. No,
that is a terrible, terrible movie. All right, let's move to some better stuff. What is an essential or classic film that you have never seen?
On the Waterfront.
Ooh, there's an answer I haven't heard yet.
Yeah, okay. Marlon Brando's best performance, I've been told. But no, I haven't seen it. It's one that I do want to see, and it's on my, what film are we doing?
The Blind Spot series.
Blind Spot series, thank you. Yes, it's on my Blind Spot series. I've fallen behind a little bit with that, but it's one I'll try and see later in the year.
Okay, it's a very, very cool film. Actually, it's kind of controversial because it's directed by Ilya Kazan, and during the communist scare, he was brought before American Congress, and he named names of people who he believed were communists, and this was kind of, in many ways, this was his response. The notion of standing up for what you believe and for not being afraid of the truth is all over this movie, which you'll see when you do see it, not if you see it. I'm expecting you to at this point. You're right. Brando's performance in it is just absolutely amazing. Lee J. Cobb, if you've ever seen 12 Angry Men.
Yes.
Okay. He's the one juror who's like adamant that the guy is guilty, like, right down to the very end. He plays He plays the union boss, the very crooked union boss, and he's awesome as well. In this movie, Carl Malden is really cool as well. He plays a priest. It's held up very well. It's still in many ways an applicable story in terms of standing up for what you believe in and that sort of thing. So I'll be really curious to know what you think of it. Finally, what is a film that for any reason you wish you had made?
I'm going to go with one of my favorite films, David Fincher's Seven.
Very cool. And why?
Well, back when I first watched it, I was really into crime novels and the thriller genre. And I just thought when I saw that, it was like the most flawless example of that genre on screen. And it also has probably my favorite scene of all time, which is the chase sequence in the middle.
Yeah.
I love that shot. And it just blew me away when I watched it the first time. And I've watched it countless times since.
You know, one of the things that's always struck me about that film, I might have mentioned this when I was doing the Film Locker series last summer. It's funny. It's like there's a lot of funny moments in that film.
Definitely. Brad Pitt has got some great lines.
Yeah. It's not easy to kind of pepper a story that's bleak. It's a very bleak story, but it's not easy to pepper that kind of story with humor, right?
Exactly. Well, I mean, smack bang in the middle of that film is that dinner scene with Gwyneth Paltrow and Brad Pitt and Morgan Freeman, and that scene is very funny.
I love that scene.
I think it's a fantastic screenplay.
Actually, I got to share my favorite little throwaway joke from the whole film is when they do get the library list of John Doe's books, and they're going down the list, and he's reading the names, and he comes across the Marquis de Sade.
Yes,
that kills me every time. I don't know why.
I laugh at that bit as well.
Well, there we go. That's Andy Buckle, and those are some great answers. But for now, we're going to go to the feedback question, which I posted on Twitter and Facebook, because the last full episode of the show was so long ago. So come on back after this. It's your chance to come talk to me. Well, as I mentioned earlier, episode 57 was a few weeks ago, so the Come Talk to Me question was put up on Facebook and Twitter, and we did get some cool responses. What I wanted to know is, summertime, of course, is the time for franchises and blockbusters, but there's always some great smaller films, so I wanted to kind of get a sense of which smaller films people were interested in seeing this summer. So on Facebook, Aiden from Cut the Crap Film Reviews mentioned Take This Waltz, which is a Canadian film directed by Sarah Polley. Samsara, Shut Up and Play the Hits, the documentary about LCD sound system. And he said, oh, and Dread. Gotta see Dread. Aiden is all over Dread, but Dread doesn't come out here until September, so I don't know if I'd necessarily qualify that as a summertime movie, not to split hairs. Lesia from Eternity of Dream mentioned a film called Hope Springs that stars Meryl Streep. She mentioned To Rome with Love. That's the new Woody Allen movie. Did you see that trailer yet?
No, I haven't, but I've heard of it. Yep.
Yeah. I kind of wonder about that one. I'm not sure if that's going to be quite in line with what Woody Allen's been doing lately. She also mentioned Take This Waltz. She said Seeking a Friend for the End of the World. It looks crazy, but I would see it because of Keira Knightley. Rachel West, dear friend of the show, family of the show, really, mentioned a whole bunch. Intouchables, Lola Versus, Safety Not Guaranteed, The Sound of My Voice, Premium Rush, that's the one with Joseph Gordon-Levitt as a bike courier.
Okay.
Touch the Sky seems like an interesting doc as well. So I actually had to look a lot of those up. I hadn't even heard of most of those.
Well, Safety Not Guaranteed is the closing night film at the Sydney Film Festival.
Oh, yeah.
And it's getting released here in July, I think.
Are you going to catch that one?
Yes, I am. I've got tickets ready.
Oh, well, there we go. So now you can be my guinea pig on that and tell me if that's a summer movie that I need to go check out.
Okay.
All right. Max from Impassioned Movies said Ruby Sparks, Moonrise Kingdom, and Beasts of the Southern Wild. I believe Beasts of the Southern Wild is a Russian movie.
Well, Beasts of the Southern Wild is what... I'll be talking about it a bit later on.
Is that one playing Sydney as well?
It is, yeah.
There we go. And it is Russian. So, okay, see, this is why I ask this thing. I learned about so many movies today going through all this. It was great. My summer looks so much better now all of a sudden. On Twitter, James Blake Ewing from Cinema Sites said Moonrise Kingdoms, Paul Williams Still Alive, The Loved Ones, 2 Days in New York, and The Loneliest Planet. Paul Williams Still Alive played Tiff last fall, and I actually got to talk to Paul Williams. He's the dude, he wrote a lot of the songs for the Muppet movies in the 80s.
Like, oh, I see.
Yeah, like he wrote Rainbow Connection, for instance.
Oh, right.
Yeah, and there's a documentary about him, because he kind of, he'd fallen into addiction for a long time, and he kind of just kind of withered off the map, but as the title says, he's still alive, and a lot of people who I know who have seen it have said it's a great doc. So, James, if you catch up with that one, you are in for good times. Leora Helbrun, a good friend of ours, said, Your Sister's Sister and Take This Waltz were two of my favorites at TIFF, and I'd see them again when released this summer. Andrew Robinson, G-Man in Trinidad. If you have not yet listened to it, you should go check out his show, the Unnamed Movie Podcast. We did an episode of last week about Marley, the documentary about Bob Marley. He mentioned Safety Not Guaranteed and Cosmopolis. Cosmopolis, I'm actually really looking forward to. And it comes out a lot sooner than I thought. Up here, it's going to be out, I think, the first week of June. That's the new Cronenberg film?
Yeah, it's, I'm looking forward to that as well. And it's coming out here in, I believe, August.
Are you into much Cronenberg?
Yeah, absolutely. I wasn't a big fan of A Dangerous Method, but last year I went through most of Cronenberg's filmography, and I enjoyed almost all of them. I didn't really like Dead Ringers too much, but I love Naked Lunch and Crash and The Fly and Existence.
I still sort of need to try and understand Naked Lunch. I really did not get that movie.
Yeah, I don't think I did either. But it made me, like, thinking about it a week afterwards and wanted to watch it again almost immediately, which, so it kind of had that effect on me.
Yeah.
But Cosmopolis, I think, looks a little bit like a blend of Existence and History of Violence.
I'm looking forward for sure. And Peter Chu, a Toronto movie lover himself, also mentioned Beasts of the Southern Wild and Killer Joe, which I know that played TIFF last year, and it stars Matthew McConaughey.
Yes, it does. And Emile Hirsch. And The Loneliest Planet was mentioned earlier on.
That one's it's playing also as well. So basically, as I said, you're going to be the test case on a lot of these. So anybody who's listening that mentioned a lot of these titles should be paying attention to your site when you start going to Sydney, because sounds like you're going to be seeing a lot of these.
I'll be seeing Killer Joe, and I'll be seeing Beast of the Southern Wild, and Moonrise Kingdom, Safety Not Guaranteed.
Very cool. Very cool, sir. What's yours? What's a smaller film that's coming up this summer, either one that was mentioned or one that was not mentioned, that you're really looking forward to?
Well, I was going to mention Beast of the Southern Wild, because it won the jury prize at Sundance, the Dramatic Jury Prize, and it's playing at Cannes in On Certain Regard, and now it's coming to Sydney Film Festival to play in competition. And the reports, or the reviews out of Sundance especially, were overwhelmingly positive. And it just sounds really intriguing. I've got a bit of a synopsis here, but it's quite complicated to describe. But yeah, it's one that stood out for me when the Sydney Film Festival lineup came out. So I'll say that. But there's another one I want to mention as well, called Neighboring Sounds, which I had not even heard of. But it's playing in competition at Sydney Film Festival, and it's been described as hidden, Michael Haneke's hidden, if Paul Thomas Anderson directed it. So I think based on that, I'm kind of excited for that one.
Okay. I'm looking at the page for it now. Where does this film come from? Is it Brazilian?
Yes, it is.
Wow. This looks like, I'm also looking at stills from this film, and it just looks really wild, actually.
It's about a private security firm, I believe, that comes in to patrol this Brazilian town, and it's sort of like an analysis of all these different individuals in the town, and I guess it unravels all their problems, the different classes and the hierarchy of the town sort of unravels as a result of this security firm coming in.
It looks like, at the moment, it looks like it's making the festival rounds. Like, it played San Francisco International Film Festival and something else called New Directors, New Films. But and like you said, it's going to be playing in Sydney. So yeah, that one's called Neighboring Sounds and sounds very, very cool. Well, my most anticipated film, a few people mentioned it, and it's not really that indie. I think in comparison though to stuff like Spider-Man and The Dark Knight Rises and Brave and that kind of thing, that it is indie, is Moonrise Kingdom. I've become a big fan of Wes Anderson in recent years, all of his stuff. I know there's people who think that he's kind of singing the same song with films like The Darjeeling Limited and Life Aquatic and that kind of thing, but I really enjoy what he does. I find that he does it very well. He, of course, gives us great little mixtapes for a soundtrack, and he's got a few new cast members this time around. He's working with people like Edward Norton, and he's got Bruce Willis, and I really, it looks like it's going to be a whole lot of fun, and of course, visually splendid.
Absolutely. I'm looking forward to it. I love all Wes Anderson's films. I even like The Life Aquatic, which I know some people don't like too much, but I think it's all right, and I'm looking forward to seeing the new cast work with him. And I've seen a trailer, but it was when it first came out, and I don't think I remember too much about it. So I'm looking to go in fairly blind to it.
Well, my question for next time, it's kind of an annual question, because the next episode is, in fact, my birthday show, and I want to know, what is your favorite film from the year you were born? I ask this question every year. It's my own nosy little way of finding out how old my listeners are. But there you go. Let me know favorite film from the year of your birth. You can email me, ryan@thematinee.ca, twitter.com/matinee_ca. You can also go through Facebook or the show notes for this post. And that's it for Come Talk to Me. The new slang is coming up. It's the biggest opening film of all time at $200 million. Come right back. We're going to talk about the Avengers. The Avengers, of course, was directed by Joss Whedon. It was written by Whedon along with Zach Penn, which it's based on the comic book series created by Stan Lee. It stars Robert Downey Jr., Chris Evans, Mark Ruffalo, Chris Hemsworth, Scarlett Johansson, Jeremy Renner, Tom Hiddleston, Samuel L. Jackson, Stellan Skarsgård, and Gwyneth Paltrow. If you don't know what The Avengers is about, I really have no pity for you. It's about Earth's greatest superheroes joining up together to save the day. Andy, we usually start the review by asking what you thought of the film and going from there. But because where The Avengers is concerned, everybody has seen it by now, or most people have seen it by now, and certainly everybody has written about it and talked about it by now. Have you noticed that? Like, every site that you read and every podcast you listen to has done their Avengers coverage?
I have seen that. In Australia here, we got it before the US, so everyone's reviews were up, as soon as the embargo was lifted.
Yeah.
And so, then in the last week or so, I've seen the influx in the States as well. So
yeah. So we can both agree that we like it, because I noticed that in your post and my post as well. But I wanted to start the conversation a little bit differently. I actually want to know, what don't you like about the film? Because it's not a perfect film. And I'm kind of curious, what were some of the things that didn't work for you about the Avengers?
The first 10 or 15 minutes or so, it took a little while for me to really start thinking, okay, this is a great film now. The first 10 or 15 minutes I felt were a bit sluggish, and I think it was designed to allow people who weren't familiar with the Marvel Cinematic Universe, the preceding five films, to get a grasp of the universe and who Loki was and what a Tesseract was. And I just kind of thought it was very expository and a little bit clunky. So I guess the weakest part for me was that opening block.
Yeah, I can see that for sure. It seemed to go on for quite some time, didn't it? It wasn't just he comes in, he turns two people to his side, and he makes off with the loot. It was, he does that, and they're trying to evacuate the base, and then there's a car chase. Given a lot of the succinct and well-mapped-out action that comes in this movie, it was a strangely paced opening.
Yeah, I don't know. There's something a little bit missed about it, I think. And the second time I watched it, I kind of felt the same way. It was just, all of a sudden, there was a very brief discussion between Loki and the, you know, the other planet, and the leaders there, and then all of a sudden he's coming in, and they're still in the Tesseract. And I think for anyone who hasn't seen Thor, hasn't seen Captain America, they won't know what the Tesseract is, what the hell is S.H.I.E.L.D. doing with it. They won't know who Loki is. Even though I think you can still enjoy this film by not seeing the five preceding films, I still think it takes a little while to come to terms with what's going on. And I don't think it's completely successful in succinctly doing that at the beginning.
Yeah.
But as soon as the Avengers start being assembled, I think, you know, you see Black Widow, we go see Banner being recruited. I think that's all really great, and from then on, it's fantastic.
What didn't work for me, and I actually need to thank my friend Sue Maynard for pointing this out, is something towards the end. The crux of the film, or the crux of the plot, I should say, along with centering around this Tesseract, this cosmic cube that Loki wants, seems to center around Bruce Banner and whether or not he is able to control turning into the Hulk. Now, we get towards the end of the film. We get to the beginning of this great big fight at the end, and you know, he everybody can tell, and you can tell if you've watched the ads, that when they get into this fight that he turns into the Hulk, but with a measure of control. He's working with the team. So it's not the Hulk that we've seen so far, who just destroys all of Harlem. There's a kind of a throwaway line where somebody says, how are you going to control your anger? And the response is, I'm always angry. Like, you know, Ruffalo sells the line beautifully, actually. He sells it really well. But there seems like there's a scene missing, or a few lines of dialogue missing, where he figures out that he is able to kind of control it. Because we see him going absolutely apeshit on this helicopter aircraft carrier thing. He does his regular Hulk smash thing, where he's taking out friend and foe and just leveling anything in sight. And then the next time we see him, after he turns back into Bruce Banner, he's all of a sudden understood that he's always angry and it's always inside him and he can control it. Well, I needed something else. I needed something where he kind of came to that realization, because he talks to a security guard and not about that at all. The security guard just tells him how he showed up there, and then he drops in with the Avengers. So that was the thing for me that didn't work. I loved so very much of Mark Ruffalo's performance, and specifically what this story did with the Hulk. But there was a few lines missing of his realization, or of him coming to the understanding of what he can do with this side of his personality.
Yeah, definitely. I think you're right there as well. I didn't really play a big part in my like disappreciation of the film, but you're totally right. It did strike me a little bit odd that all of a sudden, you know, he is going crazy and lands on Earth. Lands back on the ground and then turns up out of nowhere. I mean, Stark knew he was going to turn up. It was inevitable he was going to come back and join them. But yeah, it was sort of a bit of a stretch going from that sort of extreme to all of a sudden being able to harness his anger and now fight with the team.
That's it. So that's my nit. That's my nit to pick with the Avengers. Again, we're talking about this differently than we often do on the Matinee Cast. But how did this film ends this lap that Marvel Films has been taking around the circuit with these six movies? So we had Iron Man 1 and 2, Thor, Captain America, Incredible Hulk, and now the Avengers. So and I assume that you've seen all six.
I haven't seen the Incredible Hulk, the Edward Norton version. Okay. I haven't seen it.
Okay. How did these films work together for you, and then building into this? So like this was a gigantic experiment by Marvel Studios to line up these movies with one gigantic payoff and for the most part keep the same actors. So how did this experiment in movie making work out for you is my question.
I think it worked out very well. I wasn't the biggest fan of Thor. Or Iron Man 2. I thought Iron Man 2 just had too much going on.
Okay.
There's too many villains and too many characters introduced. But when you look at it in the grand scheme, I think, you know, having introduced Black Widow in Iron Man 2, and, you know, gradually throughout we see Nick Fury, and establishing Iron Man, Thor, and Captain America in their individual films, and the Hulk in their individual films. I think the way we get to this final film, even I think the character development in this film is excellent as well, but it's all related to the struggle in this film. It's very rare that we go back to the other films and filled in any sort of development or any sort of explanation about these characters is all related to the mission at hand. And I think that's what's successful about this film, but it benefited from having these films preceding it. And overall, I think it's a great package, even though I think The Avengers itself is the best film of the six.
Yeah, I would I'd concur. The only film I think that came close to The Avengers in terms of its quality is the original Iron Man film, the one that started everything off. When I looked back at the six films, and I did see all six in theaters, no less, it looked like I really liked three, and I sort of liked three. I was cooler on Iron Man 2, Thor, and The Incredible Hulk. I really loved Captain America, the original Iron Man, and Avengers. But overall, I liked all of them to certain extents. I think the kind of cool thing that's going to work now, and some people were already doing this this week, is these films will play very, very well together. I think that the only thing that held some of them back, especially Iron Man 2, for instance, is the time that went by in between them, because there was 2 years and then another year and then another year in between these films. And with all of that, it kind of slowed things down. So Iron Man 2, it's really, really very much, to use a metaphor that another show used at the time, it's a boxcar in the middle of the train is what it is. It's very, very much setting up the Avengers. And at the time, we didn't really want that. We just wanted more of Tony Stark doing his Tony Stark thing. Now, if you were to watch it now, if you were to just basically take a weekend and watch all of these Blu-rays together, it'll play much better.
Yeah, I agree.
Yeah, and in terms of an experiment, to answer my own question, I'm quite taken with what Marvel did. I did not think that they would be able to pull this off. I thought that it just would have crumbled out from under them at some point during this 4-year experiment, and I really got to tip my cap to the vision of the producers at Marvel, and for their ability to, by and large, keep this cast together. You know, we switched out a Hulk, and you know, to a lesser degree, we switched out a War Machine. But beyond that, everybody who they cast along the way has worked very, very well.
Everyone's been perfectly cast. I mean, we saw in Thor, we saw in Captain America and Iron Man that Robert Downey Jr., Chris Hemsworth, Chris Evans were perfectly cast for those characters. And then, you know, we switch out Edward Norton and bring in Mark Ruffalo, and it's clear that he's perfectly cast as well. And I was actually really surprised by Scarlett Johansson in The Avengers. I thought she was excellent as Black Widow, and it's one of her best performances that I've seen recently. And I even though we've talked about some of the issues with The Avengers, I really don't think a better film could have been made at the end of this stretch of films. I think coming together, bringing all these characters together in the one film and being able to balance them all as well as they did, to have a screenplay that's tense, suspenseful, and witty and funny, you know, is a testament to Joss Whedon and, yeah, the producers at Marvel.
Now, the one last thing I do want to ask, so there are a lot of pieces on the board here, you know, along with our major cast, there's all these secondary characters and so on. Was there any character that you felt either wasn't well used or maybe wasn't necessary, or just one of these components of the film that you kind of would have done something different with?
I guess of all the main Avengers, I think maybe Thor was a little bit shortchanged here. I mean, he's already been established in his own film. But apart from the scene when him and Loki go back down to Earth and have their altercation there and there's the ensuing scuffle there, there's not a lot of involvement from him, or no more than anyone else, I think.
I kind of wish they had handled the Jeremy Renner character Hawkeye a little bit differently. He spends what feels like half the movie on the wrong side with this brainwashing happening via the cosmic cube. And I wasn't really fussed about that. The beginning of this movie is very, very much about S.H.I.E.L.D., about the operatives, about the military side of things. And it really, you know, this is where Scarlett Johansson really shines. It's where Samuel L. Jackson really shines, and Clark Gregg, like you mentioned. It really could have been an avenue for Jeremy Renner to do some cool stuff as well. But having him play as the brainwashed henchman, I kind of wish they hadn't done that.
I guess it was all very quick at the beginning. All of a sudden, Stellan Skarsgård and Jeremy Renner were now on Loki's side. But yeah, I guess Jeremy Renner, considering he hasn't been introduced in any other film, apart from very briefly in Thor, yeah, it would have been great to see him have more involvement in the first half rather than just, I don't know, leading Loki's assault.
Well, we've kind of talked this movie into the ground, so we'll try and wrap up kind of quickly. But before we do, we take a stroll through the souvenir shop, and I'm sure the merchandising on this movie has a gigantic souvenir shop somewhere. But my question for you, Andy, is if you could keep one thing from this film, if you could take away one thing and keep it on the shelf, what would be your souvenir from Joss Whedon's Avengers?
Okay, I've been saying this recently to some friends over the last few days, but my favorite character is actually Captain America.
Okay.
And I really love Captain America film. And throughout this movie, you just see him being thrown around. Like, he doesn't have the suit of Iron Man, or like he doesn't have Thor's godly powers. He's just a guy with a shield. And he gets thrown around a bit. And I don't know. I would probably take his shield.
Okay.
But I would have on the show. Would be his shield. I don't know why. Really, I guess he's just my favorite character out of the lot. It's a pretty cool weapon. Like that's basically his only weapon, but it's a defense, and he can fling it around.
Yeah.
And I don't know.
Very cool.
Is that your one as well?
No. Well, if I were to take one thing away from this film and be able to keep it, it's a moment in the film that I'm not actually going to give away, but during the final throwdown in New York City. There's a punch, and it's completely unexpected. It's played in my theater. I don't know about yours, but in my theater, it played for huge laughs.
And huge laughs as well.
Yeah, and it comes at a moment where you really need it, where all hell is breaking loose, and you need this very unexpected thing. Because I think that's what really sells that final skirmish, because you're watching a city get destroyed like we've seen in films over and over and over. But within this happening, you're still getting these moments of humor. You're still getting these moments of badassery. And just that great little moment of this one punch that I really loved. That would be my takeaway if I could just kind of have that playing on a loop. Well, we rate these films on a scale of 1 to 4 stars. So, Andy Buckle, what do you give Joss Whedon's Avengers?
In my rating, I gave it 4.5 out of 5. So
like a very positive 3.5, maybe?
Yes, 3.5 out of 4.
Yeah, and that's actually mine as well. As I said, there are a few little things that I would change, so it's not really perfect. There are some greater themes that I think they could have explored that would have brought it up to a 4, but this movie is solid, solid, solid. So a 3.5 for both Andy Buckle and myself. Well, that's the Avengers. I'm curious to know what you think. If you haven't already, even if you have already written about it or podcasted about it, let me know. Ryan at the Matinee, Twitter, Facebook, the show notes. I'm curious, what do you think of the Avengers? And what are some of your thoughts? What might be your souvenir? We'll be right back after this with our top 5, the best of you. The Avengers, as I mentioned in the opening, is a film that has a cast that goes and goes and goes and goes. And they all have some pretty solid films behind them. So at the suggestion of Jess from Real Insight, what we have decided to do for this top 5 is talk about our top 5 Avenger films. And that is a film that stars one or more, in one of these cases, of the cast of the Avengers. So, Andy, why don't you get us started? What is your first... Actually, I got to say before we do get started, I got kind of grumpy because when you showed me your list, you basically took every film that I was thinking about taking.
I thought that might happen.
Yeah. So why don't you talk then about your first... your first on the top 5 Avenger films.
The first on the top 5 is Sunshine, Danny Boyle's sci-fi thriller. It stars Chris Evans. When I saw this film, the only film I'd seen him in previously was another teen movie, And I actually thought he was fantastic in this film, and I really like the film overall as well.
It's sort of funny. I know a lot of people who don't like Sunshine, especially when you get to the third act of the movie. But I love it. It's written by Alex Garland, who's a writer I really dig. Danny Boyle, I love all of his stuff. And it's kind of got this quiet cult following. Have you noticed that?
Yeah, it does. And I'm not a huge fan of the third act, but I love the first two acts. And I think the scale of the mission is enormous. And the cast is fantastic, and it's so intense towards the end, and I think it's great.
Yeah, good choice. Well, my first one is in honor of Scarlett Johansson, the Black Widow, of course, and it goes back to 2001, I think, or 2000, and it's a slightly underappreciated Coen Brothers movie called The Man Who Wasn't There. Have you seen this?
I have seen it, yeah.
Yeah, black and white movie starring Billy Bob Thornton. It's kind of film noir-esque, even though he's a barber. And Scarlett Johansson plays a young girl who he very innocently takes an interest in, named Birdie. And yeah, it's such a cool movie. I like Sunshine. It's got a great cast. And as I said, when you mention Coen Brothers movies, you know, people mention No Country for Old Men and Fargo and Miller's Crossing and that kind of thing for good reason. But you don't really hear people bring up The Man Who Wasn't There. And I really think that that's a shame, because I think people are missing out.
Totally. It's one of their most underrated films. It's a film I only watched once. It was about 4 or 5 years ago. So my memory of it isn't too great. But I did enjoy it. And yeah, black and white cinematography was fantastic for memory.
Well, what's your next movie?
Zodiac, which I think we had to choose, considering it stars both Mark Ruffalo and Robert Downey Jr.
That's right.
And it's David Fincher, and it's a pretty fantastic film. Incredible for a film of that length. It's over 2.5 hours. How engaging it is, and how the film shifts between. You've got three main characters. You've got Jake Gyllenhaal, who plays a cartoon writer for the paper, and you've got Robert Downey Jr. and Mark Ruffalo, who plays a detective on the case of the Zodiac. And it starts out following Robert Downey Jr., then it starts to follow predominantly Mark Ruffalo, and then it ends with Jake Gyllenhaal's character.
You know what I'm always struck by when people talk about Zodiac, because I'm with you, I love this movie. At the time, this movie did not do very well. I do remember people who went to see it didn't like it. It really didn't make a whole lot of money. I'm not sure if critics even dug it. So I've been sort of fascinated by the film's growth, really, in the last 5 years. Because, as I said, that when it first came out, it was almost like a strange little shoulder shrug, which was weird, given everybody involved.
Yeah, I remember the audience that I watched it with all gave a big groan at the end.
Yeah.
Because it was not really resolved, is it? It's sort of left open. No one really knew who the Zodiac Killer was.
Spoilers for Zodiac, by the way.
So that might have been a reason why some people, you know, may have said, oh, it was way too long, there was no resolution, what was the point of the movie? But I liked it.
Yeah, and let us not undersell it. Robert Downey Jr. is spectacular in this movie. This is kind of before his renaissance in 2008 with the first Iron Man film and Tropic Thunder. But he showed that he can read the phone book and he will turn it into something wonderful.
He's outstanding. Yeah. And so is Mark Ruffalo. And I think he's pretty good in almost everything as well.
That's right. Well, my next film is in honor of Jeremy Renner. He plays Hawkeye, and it's The Hurt Locker, the 2009 winner for Best Picture. It was a movie that I knew very little about, actually, going in. I did catch it on a big screen, and I think that made quite a bit of difference. It was his coming out party, because before this, he'd really only done smaller roles in films like The Assassination of Jesse James, I think he's in, and he's in 28 Weeks Later. But he was awesome in The Hurt Locker as Sergeant James, the officer who is able to defuse bombs and kind of gets off on it, really.
Yeah, I remember seeing the cast for this film, And I remember seeing like Guy Pearce involved and David Morse. And then I was thinking, who are these? Who's Jeremy Renner? Who's Anthony Mackie? I didn't even know who these people were. And then I watched the film and I was very impressed by their performances. And Jeremy Renner was nominated for Best Actor. And since then, he's been a massive star. So yeah, it was his coming out party. And yeah, it's a great film. I loved it as well.
Yeah, it's Renner. He's kind of quickly become the sort of actor who piques my interest anytime he's in a film. Like, if you had told me last year that they were going to make a fourth Bourne film, I would have probably just shrugged it off. As much as I love the Bourne trilogy, I probably just would have shrugged it off. But when I found out that he was the new Bourne, I'm interested again.
He's proven that he can be an action star in the Avengers and also Mission Impossible. Ghost Protocol.
Yeah.
Totally. He was great in that. Yeah. I kind of thought it was a bit of a passing of the buck there as well. I thought that possibly in the new Mission Impossible, he might be the one that took over from Tom Cruise, but it would be a bit strange if he was doing that and the Bourne.
Yeah, I know that was the original plan. I don't know if they're still going ahead with that, but when they planned on making a fourth Mission Impossible, Jeremy Renner was supposed to step into the main role, and from what I understand, Tom Cruise just kind of stepped in and said, "Nah, I'm not done with the series yet." So that's unfortunate. What's your next movie? Let's keep moving along here.
Okay, number three, Lost in Translation, my favorite Scarlett Johansson film, and yeah, it's just I've only watched very recently again, and it's so entertaining and it's so funny, but the tragedy of these two characters' lives is also very powerful as well, I think.
Now, let me ask you briefly, why do you think a lot of people don't care for this film? Because it seems to get, as much as people like you and I really love it, it seems to get a lot of hate, too.
Maybe it's just maybe it got so much hype at the time that people, when they watched it, were disappointed by it for some reason. Because I remember when it came out, it was the talk. There was a lot of talk about it. It got nominated for Best Picture, and I can't really say why, but maybe it's just a fact that people were disappointed when they saw it for some reason. I remember some of my friends saying that anyone could have made that film, which I didn't really agree with either. Maybe they don't like the soundtrack, they have it for me against Scarlett Johansson. I don't really know. Some people have been totally against this film because of a dislike of Scarlett Johansson, I've discovered, but
it could be. I think as well, it's a very, very still movie. It's a movie where, I hate to say it this way, but where not a whole lot happens.
That's true.
So I think that might be part of it. But no, I'm with you. I really do like this movie. I like the photography in it is stunning. And of course, Bill Murray's role in it is awesome. But, you know, let's not short sell Scarlett Johansson. Not everybody could have done what she did with this movie. And I'm with you. I love it. And I don't press it upon people who aren't fussed about it, because there's a lot of people who aren't fussed upon it. But I'm glad to see it on this list. My next one goes back to 1992. It is a biopic about the life of Charlie Chaplin. It is called Chaplin and stars Robert Downey Jr. as the iconic actor and director Charlie Chaplin himself. Have you ever seen that movie?
I haven't seen it, no.
Oh, dude. So he stars as Chaplin, which is no small feat because Chaplin's a genius. There's just no other way to put it with the silent medium as a director, as an actor, as a comedian. He is absolutely brilliant. So to try and embody that is so friggin' difficult. We've seen actors try to embody other geniuses like Picasso and Beethoven, and when you try to embody Chaplin, it's the same sort of thing. But Downey Jr. is just stellar as it. He gets the timing of everything just right. He's got the charm. He's not exactly throwing around the witty comments like he does in the other movie we're talking about, but he's fabulous. So I would say definitely check out this film if you've never seen it.
I've heard actually it's a flawed film, but a fantastic performance. That's what I've heard about it. And he got nominated for Best Actor, I believe, and that was sort of his big breakthrough. From then on, the world took notice of him, and he had some issues, you know, later on.
Yeah. But, it definitely, like, the film definitely, it's it's not as succinct as it could be. It kind of wanders at times, but and the structure of it is a little weird. But yeah, it is a genius performance which really carries the whole thing. What's your next movie?
Eternal Sunshine of the Spotless Mind.
Very, very cool. I think in all the top fives we've ever done on this show, I think that's the movie that comes up most often.
Oh, really?
Yeah. It's
Mark Ruffalo.
Well, it's just, it's the kind of movie that, yeah, it's got Mark Ruffalo, of course, who's the Hulk. You know, we talked about him before in Zodiac as well. But it's just, it's the kind of movie that captured the imagination of a lot of people in the last 10 years.
Absolutely. And I think it's a film that delves into the complexities of relationships and interaction, and every single character learns something about love and relationships in this film. And Mark Ruffalo's character, and especially the scenes with him and Elijah Wood, I think they're hilarious. I think, and I really like his character. I think he'd be a great guy to hang out with. Felt like I related to him a little bit in a way, just, you know, oddly. And he's a character that I've always sort of picked out as being like, that's a cool guy. And one of the many reasons why I love that film.
I loved watching his scenes with Kirsten Dunst when they're kind of, they're working, but they're also sort of on a date.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, I thought that they had some really good chemistry. I loved watching him try to do the job, this very strange job that he's been contracted to do. And it was one of those, it was kind of before a lot of people really knew who Ruffalo was. This was around the time of his coming out party, around 2004 mm-hmm. or so. So yeah, I good call on that one, I guess, is what I'm trying to say. My next film and your final film kind of go hand in hand. So I'm going to talk briefly about mine, and then we'll roll right into your number one. My next one is in honor of Nick Fury, Samuel L. Jackson himself. And a part of his that I really like that I think is underappreciated is from 1997. It is Quentin Tarantino's Jackie Brown. Samuel L. Jackson plays Ordell Robbie. He's a gun runner, and he's got all these, basically all he does in this movie, is talk. And he talks, of course, as only Sam Jackson can talk. And there's some times where he's playing off Pam Grier, and other times where he's playing off Chris Tucker, and other times where he's playing off Robert De Niro. And it's just, it's a movie that a lot of people at the time didn't really get. It's got tones of blaxploitation, which is a very niche genre even to this day. But he just owns that part. Have you ever seen Jackie Brown?
I have seen it, but only the once. And I recently read a post, I think Sam Fragoso, Duke of the Movies, gave it a 4 out of 4, and I thought, I have to watch that film again. Because I love Tarantino, and I guess it's one of the films that I like but don't love. I love almost all of his films, but I haven't given this one enough views to know whether I love it or not.
Yeah, it's, as far as Tarantino films go, it's The Ugly Duckling. It's the one that everybody kind of forgets about and moves on, just because all the others are so iconic, right? And basically, and Something's Got to Finish Last. But yeah, do give it another look, because it's aged very, very well. Everybody in it is fantastic. The story still holds up beautifully. It's based on a book by Elmore Leonard, who's the same writer who wrote movies like Get Shorty and Out of Sight. And as I said, it's underrated Tarantino for sure. As opposed to your next film, which is probably the masterpiece of Tarantino still to this day.
I think so. It's, number one is Pulp Fiction. And it's in honor of Samuel L. Jackson as well. And the reason why I had to put this here anyway, but, you know, Samuel L. Jackson's sort of notorious these days of yelling in his films a lot. And back when, in Pulp Fiction's day, when he yelled, it meant business. Well, these days, it doesn't mean quite as much, I don't think. But, no, I think, like, in Pulp Fiction, there are some fantastic scenes and iconic scenes and, yeah, some fantastic dialogue, you know, from Samuel L. Jackson's character, Jules Winfield, I think it is.
Yep.
And, yeah, his sort of buddy hitman thing with John Travolta is, always a delight to watch. It's probably my favorite Samuel L. Jackson role.
The cool thing about that movie, and the reason why I was actually really happy that you chose it, is it set the mold for Samuel L. Jackson parts. You know, like, he worked before it, but he never really had kind of his presence down until Jules came along, if that makes any sense.
Yeah. So, it does. Yeah. Really.
So it really, really kind of set the template for what you were going to get if you put Samuel L. Jackson in your movie.
He's a guy that, I don't know, seems to always be in control. And on one level making you laugh, and on another level making you fear for the character that's standing opposite him.
Yeah. You know, even just in the way he speaks, really, really smart, really direct. You wouldn't dare, you know, cut him off or argue with him as he's speaking. That all of that really, really got established with Pulp Fiction. And yeah, there's no denying that we had to talk about that movie in this top five. Well, my last movie, though, it's a little bit of a cheat, and it's a film that I actually haven't seen in a while, so I might have to give it another watch soon. But the one actor who we haven't really talked about much in the Avengers is Stellan Skarsgård. He plays the professor who first we saw in Thor, and he's back in this movie doing Loki's evil bidding. And he was really cool in a very, very awesome movie called Ronin. Have you ever seen that?
Yes, I've seen Ronin. Yeah.
Yeah. Awesome movie in terms of espionage. It stars Robert De Niro. It's chosen more for the film than for Skarsgård part in it, although he is pretty weaselly and pretty, you know, subtly deceitful. It includes one of the best car chases that you will ever see.
Yes.
And yeah, it's a really tight, it's what I used to call an action movie for grown-ups.
Yeah, it's an intelligent action film. And yeah, as you said, the car chase sequence. I mean, there's two car chase sequences.
Yeah,
one in particular is the one that's notorious for being one of the best.
Yeah. And the movie has a fantastic cast besides De Niro and Skarsgård. Jean Reno is one of the crooks. Natasha McElhorn, who people might not know by name, but they certainly know by face, because she's got a very, very striking face. She's in this movie. Sean Bean is in this movie, and Jonathan Pryce as well. It's one of these. It casts some of like the best character actors that you can find.
With Stellan Skarsgård, if we're talking about him as the main. He plays that weaselly villain traitor very well. And there's a film that just came out here recently called The King of Devil's Island.
Okay.
It's a Norwegian, set in Norway on this secluded island. It's like a correctional facility for boys that are either have been abandoned or been picked up for petty crimes. And he plays the governor. And, yeah, just this horrible, evil character. And I think that's something that he can do quite well. Look at Melancholia, he sort of plays that. That kind of character as well. So,
have you ever seen the original version of Insomnia?
No, I haven't. No.
Okay, because he's awesome in that too. He plays the if you've seen the Christopher Nolan version, he plays the Al Pacino part, the cop. He's always around. You know, he's almost a hey, it's that guy.
Yeah,
I had to include him. I didn't really want to go the whole way just talking about Robert Downey Jr. and Scarlett Johansson. I thought we needed to give a little bit of love to Stellan Skarsgård. But
there, he deserves plenty of recognition. He's fantastic.
Oh yeah, yeah, absolutely. So there we go. There's a lot of great movies. If you got your Avengers fix and you haven't seen any of these are some movies to start with. Some fantastic films, of course, that. You could discuss endlessly, but we will not, just because there is so much to say on all sorts of other things. But we will call it a day for this episode of the Matinee Cast. Come on back for episode 59 on May 28th. That's the birthday show. We might be talking about Dark Shadows, or we might do something totally different, but you'll have to tune in to find out. Andy's site is at thefilmemporium.blogspot.com. Do you have anything coming up that you want to plug?
Coverage of the Sydney Film Festival, which is running here between June 6th and June 17th. I'm going to be seeing probably more than 20 films at the festival. I'm going to try and cover most of them on my site. I'll probably be doing a day one roundup, a day two roundup, you know, and just going through the films I've seen and giving a brief review. And so, yeah, I guess keep an eye out for them. Some of the films we talked about earlier on in the matinee cast today will appear on my site.
Yeah, so. I'm thinking back to last year, and correct me if I'm wrong, but one of the films that you really dug at Sydney last year was The Guard, right?
I did. I saw The Guard. It was one of the funniest films I saw at the festival. And it was, apart from playing in Berlin earlier in the year, it was one of the first places in the world to play. So the lineup this year is not quite as strong as last year, I don't think. I mean, I recognize more titles last year than I have this year so far, but that means there might be some more surprises.
That's true. So, and the one thing I'll remember about the guard from last year is I hadn't heard about it before. I saw it on your site and kind of made a mental note. And as soon as it came to Toronto, I was, as I said, I was quite happy that you had written about it. Otherwise, I might not have given it a second thought. Where can people find you on Twitter, sir?
Buckle22.
There we go. So find Andy and follow him. My own blog is thematinee.ca. For more podcasting content, you can find back episodes of this show at thematinee.ca/podcasting. You can also find them on Blueberry and the iTunes Music Store. They both give you ways to subscribe for free and get alerts when new episodes drop. Feedback on the Avengers, on your favorite film from the year you were born, and on Avenger movies can be sent to ryan@thematinee.ca. You can send it through Facebook, Twitter, or the comments section of the blog. I respond to pretty much everything. Any last thoughts before we wrap up for tonight for me / this morning for you?
No, not really, but if you haven't seen The Avengers yet, definitely check it out. I think you'll have a blast, and it set the bar for blockbusters to come this year, even though there's a couple of, you know, we've got Prometheus, The Dark Knight Rises, which a lot of people are anticipating. It's a tough act to follow after The Avengers.
That's true. And one last little thought that I'll give at this point is that you have done well for your first episode, sir. So any podcasters out there who are listening would be very well served to book Andy as a guest on your show.
Oh, thank you very much. And thank you for having me along.
Oh, you're welcome. For Andy Buckle, I'm Ryan McNeil. We'll see you at the matinee.